I attended a workshop that was put on, it was sponsored by the Mid-America region of the UUA. And so it was open to anybody, any UUs who wanted to sign up and pay just really a few dollars. It was a real bargain. The workshop was being presented by people from fellows of the Royal Society of Arts, whose full title is something like the Royal Society of Arts and Commerce and, Arts, Manufactures, and Commerce. But here's, I like their mission statement. They say, we're committed to a future that works for everyone, a future where we can all participate in its creation. But we had a wonderful conversation with them, and they wanted to share with us and gave permission for us to share with other groups that we work with, which is why you get to hear about it, because I really liked it. This tool that they have designed, they call it the Future Change Framework. And it's really just a 4x4 grid. And when I was thinking of telling y'all about it, I was envisioning screen sharing. And then I realized, oh wait, we're not on Zoom anymore, so we can't screen share. But I will make sure that y'all get access to just a one sheet handout that has some links, which includes all the material they gave us. So you'll have lots of versions of this 4x4 grid. But first, I want to back up, because the reason they are looking at change in the future is that they are reflecting on where we are here, some of the fellows at the Royal Society of Arts. And they think, the COVID-19 pandemic fits all the classical definitions of a crisis. They even maybe of a super event. It's multi-dimensional, and it's multi-staged. It's been all very complicated, and it's like crisis over and over and over again, right? And crisis, in and of itself, is about change. It kind of disrupts everything, potentially. It can disrupt identity, beliefs, social norms, and we've seen all of that during the pandemic. And it also illuminates, it gives us a moment to stop and say, oh, look at that. This is hard because it's challenging my belief that this is how things are or should be. And it gives us an opportunity to recognize how we might be different than what we thought we were in the before time. And I can remember, I heard them talking about this, and I'm remembering back to the very first weeks of the pandemic, thinking that this is going to be a gift of some sort. This is going to give us a window to see things and to make different choices for ourselves. It'll give us an opportunity to change. And so it's like, oh, look, these people over in the UK, they've thought up this whole way to help groups think through this and do this. So I just want to share that framework with you a little bit. So, we're in a crisis, and you all have probably heard there is some language, I believe it's Chinese, but I didn't go and look this up, where the word for, or the ideogram for crisis is the same as that for opportunity. So a crisis is something that brings change and disruption, but also brings opportunity with it. And it's pretty clear to all of us that there isn't going to be any back to normal. Which is really interesting, and I'm seeing lots of people thinking a lot about trauma and educating themselves about trauma as a way to respond to the needs of everybody, various groups of people coming back to whatever will be our way of being together now. It won't be the same as the old normal. But when someone experiences trauma, they are never the same again. Life is different, their brain works differently. This is perhaps, the COVID-19 has brought trauma experiences to some of us, but not to all of us. But for all of us, this is maybe parallel to the trauma experience because we won't ever be the same. I don't know for sure that I'll not be carrying a mask in my back pocket everywhere I go for the rest of my life. Because we may just live in a society where germs are getting better and better at being germs, and we're more and more aware of them and trying to keep each other safe. We don't know where we're going, right? So this gives us a chance to examine the old things in our lives, and I'll tell you what things that the Royal Society was looking at in a minute, and to think about what new things we've done in response to the crisis and how we choose to be around those old things and those new things. So we have stopped doing some things, we have started doing other things, we will wish to resume some things and abandon some things, and we will wish to create some new forms, and we will choose to keep some of the new things. We will choose to let go of some of the new things. We will, if we can, want to let go of these because it makes it harder for us to see each other, you know, and harder to talk and hear. But this framework, which is really just a 2x2 set of boxes, you know, two rows, two columns, right? Here, I can show you. It looks like this. And it's a way to sort things out that I found really powerful. And we did it a little bit in the workshop, which wasn't quite as useful because we were coming from all different places, all different congregations all over the country. But I did it recently with my staff group at First Studio. We had our annual retreat, and we played with this a little, and it's like, oh, wow, this is great. So it's a three-part process, and that's going to be outlined on the handout I'm going to make sure. I guess Jill and I will make sure it gets posted on the Facebook page for you. First, you just scan. You know, what's going on here? What are we doing? What are we doing differently? And the things, you just brainstorm. A group can brainstorm. What things have we stopped and what things have we started during the crisis? And things are actions, behaviors, structures, beliefs. Could be policies, you know. So what have we stopped doing? What have we started doing during this crisis period? And then you take that 4x4 grid and you start plugging them in. So that 4x4 grid, this row is things you started, and this row is things you stopped in response to the crisis. And then the columns represent during the crisis and after the crisis. So in this box up here, you put the things that you started that were just responses to the immediate needs of the crisis, and you won't need them later on. You know, you'll let them go. For instance, you know, school on Zoom. At least we hope we won't need it forever. I'm not saying the time to stop it has arrived. We are where we are. Okay, this box down here is things that you used to do that you had to let go of, okay? But when you let go of them, you maybe found out you didn't need them as much, which is different from these things down here that you stopped during the crisis, but you know you will resume. For example, meeting in person for worship. For me, definitely goes right there in that box. We need to do this together. Because this is me. Other people might feel very differently, but we need to be together to be a gathered community, I believe. And this box is really interesting too. This is the box of things that were started in response to the pandemic, but that might be future innovations. They might be things we want to keep. They somehow fit into our mission. For example, making our worship services multi-platform so that other people, it's happened, I think, to every UU congregation that has continued to be active in one way or another through the pandemic. They found themselves being able to serve people they never would have met if we had not had the pandemic, because we were meeting on Zoom and people could log in from anywhere they liked. People visited lots of congregations, made lots of connections that never would have been made otherwise. So up here, an organization, whether it's a local congregation or whether it's the UUA or anybody else really, might decide they want to try to innovate and or amplify practices that were started during the pandemic that increase the inclusion Because that's also one of our values, as well as being a gathered community and in person with our bodies. So what I find really useful is this is a good to, and it's really these two quadrants that I think are the exciting ones. Because this is the box of obsolete things that you are in a position to see aren't really, they may once have been very important and aligned with vision and mission of whatever group, but maybe they don't serve that purpose anymore. And maybe it's okay to let go of them. And maybe since we had to let go of them, we've even had practice not doing them, and it doesn't hurt as badly to let go of them. So what have you stopped doing that nobody's missing? Nobody's needs are being failed because you stopped whatever thing. And then there's this box, which is, what new things have we done that we discovered we might want to keep doing? Because they serve our mission in some way we hadn't thought of before. And wow, this was kind of interesting. We tried this thing and it worked, and it wasn't impossible like we thought it might be. So I thought this was really useful, and actually what I really hope is that we can have a little bit of conversation. Jill tells me we that's planned in. But I think being able to examine and to assess our old things, and also we've been forced to have a moment where we have lots of new things on our plates and around us, but to have a framework for assessing those new things. We're not going to just do new things because they're new. We're not going to save every change we've made in the last year and a half just because it was a new thing, but to be able to think critically about what aligns with our purpose. We can choose what we will do, what we will not do. This is a moment where we're being forced to do lots of that choosing. This is a tool to help us do that together, to brainstorm, to, well, who put what, you know, you make a list of changes, and then who puts which things in which columns? Well, that's really interesting, because you might want to keep something that I'm ready to quit. So then how do we talk about this? This gives us a chance. I think it really, it's a pathway to freedom and flexibility and autonomy, both for us as individuals and as organizations, groups that work together to do things. And it helps us to make responsible choices and decisions. And it's also just really interesting to see what comes up. So one of the things that came up in the staff meeting where we did this, someone said, so here's a belief, because beliefs are things. So some of the new beliefs that we've all kind of absorbed and practiced is the belief that it's not safe to be together, that it's not safe to eat together. And there was another thing that it's not safe to do together that this person talked about. It's not safe to sing together. So those are true beliefs in the context of COVID-19 moving through a population, right? But it may be that we need to attend to, we need to be conscious of the need to let go of those beliefs once they are no longer serving us, once they're no longer necessary. There are lots of, we hesitate to stand too close to people, and we've retrained our brains. We've made different paths in our brains. And so we may need to be conscious of that and conscious of choosing when it is safe to go back to the old times where it was safe to hug each other, where it's a good thing. So it's interesting to see what pops up for people when you do this kind of thing. And I really like it because I'm aware that right now we're in this period of, oh, it's time to move on. We're tired. We're really tired. Is anybody in this room not just tired? Really, I mean, the medical people are tired. I know church staff people are exhausted. I haven't actually talked to the volunteers who make everything. That's all, probably all of you who make things happen here, but you're probably tired of making things happen the way we have to do it during the pandemic. So we're all tired, and some part of our brains just wants to go back to all the old patterns. Or we want to transform. We want everything to be new, both new and or have it all. Have the old stuff and the new stuff. And it's becoming really clear. It was interesting to me to hear how y'all were talking during Joys and Concerns. It's very obvious the next part's, we're not home free yet. The virus is with us, and the Delta variant is going to do a whole whatever it's going to do, and we don't even know yet. The next part, and not just the Delta virus, but the Delta variant, but what comes after it, it's going to be hard. One of the regional staff people said, you know, our brains want to believe that all we have to do is relax and go back. It'll be easy once we're not under the threat of the virus anymore. And in fact, it is going to be more hard for a while. It'll be a different kind of hard, maybe, but it's going to be hard for a while. So we need to take good care of ourselves, and we need to take good care of each other and exercise compassion and deal with grief, trauma if we have it. We need to think about what we've lost. We need to hold each other in re-covenanting how we will be community together and take care of each other in the light of all that loss. And I'm kind of tired when I think about, oh my goodness, there's all this stuff in front of me. I found that this framework, because it's so specific, here's a process. You do this and you think about specific things and you plug them in on them. It was really nice to have a tool that helped. It gave me and also I think my staff colleagues a little bit of a lift. Kind of go, hey, here's a thing we can do. So it may be a thing you want to take to other places and do it with groups of people you work with, or do it here. We'll do a little bit here at the end of the service together. But I think it's very much in line with our values as you use. I think probably, you know, the Royal Society of Arts and we are on the same page about what we want for the world. And when they were closing up the workshop, one of the fellows said she finds this to be a hopeful process. Because we are learning to hold space for other human beings and their needs, and learning to nurture choices that will build the world we want. They were talking very much in terms of a lot of their projects apparently focus on how do we want the world to be, and what do we do to move it that way. So this is a tool for doing that. I felt like they were very on the same page as Unitarian Universalists. And it was really fun. So I will stop, I think. Let me see. I wanted to read something to you, but I'm gonna stop so we have time to talk. So this is a plea just for bringing your whole selves to everything and knowing we're in the middle of something really big. But if we can talk to each other about it, we will find things. We will figure out what we need to do. I know we will. And again, it's really lovely to be here with you all. Thank you.